Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24-7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a day of stark contrasts between Ivanka Trump and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin gleefully announcing the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, while a few miles away Palestinian protesters were being shot down by Israeli snipers, with more than 52 killed and 2,400 wounded. Dr. Guy Ziv, a professor at American University School of International Service and director of the Israeli National Security Project and author of Why Hawks Become Doves, Shimon Peres and Foreign Policy Change in Israel, joins us to discuss Prime Minister Netanyahu's soaring popularity in Israel, where he is seen as having got Trump to tear up Obama's Iran deal and move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. We'll look into whether today's carnage could be topped by massive demonstrations planned for Tuesday, the day which Palestinians observe as the Nakba, the catastrophe, when in the 1948 war Palestinians fled or were driven out of their homes. And we'll assess whether the U.S. has extracted any concessions from Israel in exchange for handing Netanyahu such massive political gifts, and if there is any hope of reviving the two-state solution and the so-called peace process between Israel and the Palestinians. Then we will examine the staggering hypocrisy of the overtly Christian Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, who has just shut down the Department of Education's investigative unit looking into the rampant abuses by the for-profit colleges, who are subsidized by the taxpayer to rip students off with meaningless education and worthless diplomas, indenturing them for life with crippling student debt they will never be able to pay off because they will never get the jobs they were promised. David Halperin, a senior fellow at Republic Report, who was a special assistant for national security affairs for President Clinton and a counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee, joins us to assess why Betsy DeVos has no problem with ruining the lives of young Americans who, instead of being seen as investments in the country's future, are seen as profit centers to be milked by Wall Street vultures and bottom-feeding scammers. Then finally, we will speak with Einat Lev, a volcanologist and research professor at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University, whose research focuses on lava flow dynamics at different volcanoes around the world, including Hawaii. We will discuss her article at CNN, Why Hawaii's Volcano is in Danger of Going Ballistic, and whether, while the focus is on fissure-spewing lava on Kilauea's East Rift Zone, Kilauea Summit Crater, where the lava lake is dropping precipitously, is about to explode, as it did back in 1924, sending giant 8-ton rocks into the air the size of 4 pickup trucks. And joining us now is Dr. Guy Ziv, a professor at American University School of International Service and the director of the Israel National Security Project, an online repository of statements by Israeli security experts who favor a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He's the author of Why Hawks Become Doves, Shimon Peres and Foreign Policy Change in Israel. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Guy Ziv.
Thank you.
So the hawks are in ascendancy in Israel. Netanyahu is more popular than ever. Most Israelis think he's responsible for Trump pulling out of the JCPOA, the P5 plus 1 deal with Iran, and the movement, obviously, of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem has been hugely popular in Israel. So what's your sense of whether or not there's any quid pro quo here? Did the Americans get anything out of this deal? They gave everything to Israel. What did they get in exchange?
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree with the premise that they gave everything to Israel, simply because I don't think that any of this serves Israel's interests, nor do I think it serves U.S. interests. So I'm going to start from that premise. I think that Netanyahu has kind of a set of objectives that he has been very fortunate to be able to meet, and it's definitely useful for him to have President Trump kind of navigate this. But I don't think that President Trump really understands the nuances. I don't think that he has studied up on the Iran deal, on the U.S. embassy move. So much of what he does is driven by political symbolism that does not necessarily enhance U.S. Strategic interests.
Well, but you're making the distinction between Israel and Netanyahu, and I think it's a valid distinction. but Netanyahu's taking Israel in a certain direction that you have indicated you think is against Israel's interests. It's worth noting that there was a big split between Netanyahu and his security experts in the intelligence services, Mossad and military intelligence. They kept saying that the Iran deal is actually good for Israel, but Netanyahu nevertheless went ahead and pushed and urged Trump to get out of it, and now they're celebrating the fact. So what is the current situation in Israel? Is there still a recognition amongst the military and the intelligence people that tearing up this deal is a bad idea?
Yes, well, I think you phrased it pretty well. There's kind of a gap between what the politicians are saying and what the security establishment is saying, which is not to say that the security establishment was united behind the Iran deal. There was kind of a range of perspectives. But once the Iran deal was reached, there was a near consensus that it should remain intact because it's better than the alternative. And part of the problem is that there is no alternative that's been outlined by this administration or by Netanyahu for that matter. So I think at this point, yes, you have a split between Netanyahu, who's clearly happy about Trump's decision to pull away from the agreement, and the members of the security establishment who are very wary of the repercussions, because Iran is now going to be much closer to a breakout than it was than it would have been had we stayed in the deal. And that, of course, assumes that Iran is even going to stay in the deal, which is far from clear.
So what did you think about what's happening today in Israel, Dr. Guy Zivin? Obviously, it's going to get more intense in terms of demonstrations and deaths as the Palestinians observe the Nakba, as they call it, the catastrophe. Yeah. The founding of the State of Israel. There was obviously great celebration yesterday in Israel on Foundation Day, but then you'll see the reverse, if you will, coming from the Palestinians. And today, I don't know what the death toll is as we speak, but it's up past 50, with 2,400 Palestinian demonstrators wounded just in today so far. So it's a stark contrast, is it not, to Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, and Ivanka Trump pulling back the curtain on the seal of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem and all the celebrations, with, of course, Jared Kushner saying, where there is peace in this region, we will look back upon this day and we'll remember that the journey to peace started with a strong America recognizing the truth. I don't know what the truth he's referring to is. Do you have any idea?
Look, I think the administration has been saying from day one that they're committed to the peace process. That President Trump says he wants the ultimate deal. Jared Kushner is supposedly the point person to help realize this deal. But there's no question in my mind that the events we're seeing unfold today with the opening of the embassy, the relocation, its symbolism, and the kind of the spirit that we see among the Palestinians contradicts the objective of realizing a two-state solution. And so, again, I kind of want to stress the emphasis on political symbolism for this administration and for the Netanyahu government, for that matter, as opposed to pursuing, U.S. strategic interests. There's a reason that every administration since Bill Clinton has issued the presidential waiver every 6 months, not because they didn't want to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, but because they understood that East Jerusalem is expected to be a capital of a future Palestinian state, and they did not want to prejudice the outcome of the final status negotiations. So I think today would have been a much more joyous occasion if it were done in the context of a final status agreement.
And again, I'm speaking with Dr. Guy Ziv, who's professor at American University School of International Service and director of the Israel National Security Project, an online repository of statements by Israeli security experts who favor a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He's the author of Why Hawks Become Doves, Shimon Peres and Foreign Policy Change in Israel. So that takes us back, Guy, to my original question, though. Did the U.S. get anything out of this major concession to Netanyahu?
It's far from clear whether it had. I think part of what drives President Trump, and part of what drove him to do this, is domestic politics. So I don't see it purely in terms of his relationship with Netanyahu or with Israel. I see it also in terms of his dealings with the Christian right in the United States, because it was the Christian right, after all, that really pushed him to move the embassy. It was very, very important to leaders of the evangelical community. And I think that that should not be lost in the conversation. So there's definitely a domestic political gain, perhaps, for the president.
Right, but what shouldn't be lost in that context is an understanding of why the Christian right have this affection for Israel, the so-called Christian Zionists. Israel is the trigger for the end of the world, according to their rather, I think, spiritual pornographic interpretation of the book of Revelation. So the Israelis essentially, I think something like only 144,000 Israelis get raptured up in the Great Rapture, but the rest of us, me and perhaps you too, we all end up in the lake of fire. So it's a horrible, horrible idea, isn't it, to support Israel in the hope that they will begin World War III and Armageddon?
Well, I won't disagree with you. I just don't have much to add to that.
Well, let's then focus on the minister. I think it supports what you're saying, that there's a domestic component here in the United States to what's going on in Jerusalem today. The Southern Baptist minister who gave the invocation in the opening of the embassy, Mitt Romney, has condemned him as a bigot. He has said that the Mormons are heretics. He's made anti-Semitic remarks as well, and he's also said that Catholics are the work of Satan. So an odd choice, would you not say, for a representative of American Christendom?
Yes, and you have two. I don't know if you mentioned this, but you have two pastors who have made very controversial and in the past even anti-Semitic statements. So it is very interesting, ironic, that they were the invited guests at the embassy. Also very interesting that no Democrat was invited, not even the former ambassador to Israel, Dan Shapiro, who happens to be in Israel at this time. He wasn't invited. No Obama administration official was invited. No Democrat. And so this also raises the question of, is this administration aiming to completely turn this issue into a partisan football game? Because that seems to be what's happening. And that started not with Trump, but with Netanyahu several years ago. As you may recall, he, you know, addressed a joint session of Congress when he tried to thwart the Iran deal.
Right, and it could go back further. When he showed up during the Clinton administration, and the night before he met with Clinton, he went to a rally with Jerry Falwell, one of the leaders of the Christian Zionist movement here in the United States.
That's exactly right. No, it does go way back to his very first term. You're absolutely right.
Right. So is there any possibility that something is going to happen inside of Israel? We started out by mentioning how Netanyahu's popularity is soaring. Israelis feel that he's responsible for pushing Trump into breaking the deal with Iran, and they're giving him credit for the U.S. embassy move to Jerusalem. What does this mean? I mean, it's obvious when you see the support for Likud here in the U.S. from some of these right-wing big donors to Trump, like Sheldon Adelson, and obviously we understand that. It's a bit of a paradox because, as far as I know, two-thirds to three-quarters of American Jewry actually vote Democratic, and you mentioned there's no Democrats invited to the opening. So what's your sense of, is there any written in the past about not giving up on the two-state solution? At this point, it's pretty hard to have any kind of enthusiasm for peace between the Israelis and Palestinians, in spite of what Jared Kushner says. And there's also... Go ahead. And it's also, I was going to say, there's also not much sense that the Israeli left is going to make a comeback politically.
Not at this point. I think this is a short-term gain for Netanyahu for the reasons you outlined. I think the real question is what's going to happen after, you know, what's going to happen after this dies down, assuming it will die down and not turn into another intifada, which is, by the way, far from clear at this point if it is going to die down. But assuming it does, then the question is, what's next? What do you do with, the Gaza Strip, which is essentially an open-air prison where people are in dire straits? What do you do with the Palestinian Authority, which has a leader who's been in power now for 12 years, 13 years out of he's still in his 12th or 13th year of his first term. He is ill. He's old. He's unpopular. I don't think we're going to see a two-state solution during the Trump-Netanyahu-Abbas era. I think this will have to happen later. The question is, how many more lives will be lost between now and then? At the end of the day, there has to be a two-state solution because it's the only viable solution. It's the only way that Palestinians will have their legitimate rights while Israel's security needs can be met. And it's truly tragic that that hasn't happened yet and that there is no move in that direction.
Well, just in the last few minutes, guys, since you direct the Israel National Security Project at American University and you closely follow national security issues within Israel, a while back, apparently, the U.S. set up a secret permanent military base in the Negev Desert, an air defense base. But my understanding is that more recently, they've set up another secret base on the Golan Heights that may well have something to do with signals intelligence and looking, picking up stuff inside of Syria where there's an ongoing war. What do you think's happening there? There's been an exchange of rockets between the Iranians and the Israelis striking Iranian targets in Syria. And also Netanyahu himself has spent quite a bit of time just in the last few days with Putin. He was there for 8 hours. I think he had very long meetings with Putin. They seem to get on. Russia and Israel, even though they're in pretty close quarters in the same war zone, whatever their deconfliction is, it seems to work. But it's almost like the Russians are giving Israel a free hand to pound the Iranians. So what do you think's going on?
So here I think there actually is a rather clear objective on Netanyahu's part, which is to prevent the Iranians from creating a permanent foothold in Syria, which they have been trying to do. And here is where I think the security establishment is more or less in line with Netanyahu on this. So this is not so much a right-wing or left-wing or hawkish or dovish issue. It's seen as in the national security interests of Israel to prevent the Iranians from having that permanent military presence in Syria, and Israel will do whatever it can to prevent that from happening. Now we're not talking about regime change. So it's not about toppling Assad, even though every once in a while you'll come across a voice here and there from a cabinet minister or a Knesset member who will hint or suggest it. But as far as I know, that's definitely not the policy. And you're absolutely right about the communication and rapport that Netanyahu has established with Putin. Probably a smart move, but I would not read too much into it. At the end of the day, Putin is not going to give up, Russian interests. And that, according to Putin, is ensuring Assad's continued rule in Syria. I also would not assume that the Russians would be okay with any Israeli military operation, especially not one that would result in Russian deaths. So I think that's something that Israelis are probably quite sensitive to as well. So long as Russian soldiers are not put in harm's way, Putin may look the other way. But, accidents can happen. And so this is why it becomes a very, very risky gamble in a sense.
But just in closing, in the broader sense, though, there's a lot of concern that pulling out of the JCPOA, the P5+1 deal with Iran, is a move away from diplomacy towards war. And there's a lot of speculation now that there might well be another war in the Gulf. There's no question that Netanyahu's adopted a very hawkish attitude to Iran, as has MBS, the Crown Prince in Saudi Arabia. And John Bolton is considered quite hawkish on it as well. It's difficult to know where Pompeo comes down and where General Mattis comes down. He's the one person that a lot of people sort of turn to in the hope that he's the adult in the room, but we simply don't know. But on Netanyahu's side, though, just trying to analyze what he's up to, is he trying to get the Americans to fight a war for him against Iran, or is he just using Iran as a bogeyman? Because the more you focus on Iran, the less you have to focus on the Palestinian issue, which is something that they don't have a leg to stand on. It's, in other words, it's the politics of distraction, just as Donald Trump employs the politics of distraction here on a daily basis in the United States.
Yeah, I don't think Netanyahu is itching for a war. That would be a huge risk, and if there's one thing he's not, is it's a risk taker. He tends to be risk averse. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that the situation can't spiral out of control, that accidents may happen or misunderstandings or misinterpretations, and before you know it, there is a regional war, and I think that's the real danger. But I don't think that it's in anyone's interest at this point to have a war there. Also, keep in mind that Iran may decide to use one of its proxies should it decide to retaliate against Israel. It can use Hezbollah, which is much stronger now and a much stronger position today than it's ever been, in part because of the experience they've had in fighting for Assad's regime in Syria, and in part because of Iranian financial and logistical support. So I think that there are a lot of dangers there, and hopefully we won't see a war. And the one, I think, perhaps silver lining here is that the fact that Netanyahu has established kind of a modus vivendi with some of the moderate Sunni Arab regimes could bode well for regional talks and subduing the tensions. But there's a lot of work to do on that front.
But on the question of, is Netanyahu using the Iranian bogeyman on the international stage as a way of avoiding having to deal with the Palestinian issue?
I think he's more focused on the Iranian issue than he is on the Palestinian issue. You know, I don't know if he's using Iran as a bogeyman. I think he's genuinely concerned about Iran and its strategic hold in the region. I also don't think he is very focused on the Palestinian issue, and there isn't, frankly, a lot of pressure on him to do much on the Palestinian front. So I'm not sure he really needs Iran to divert attention from that.
Sure.
I think it's something he actually believes in.
Right, and he's certainly not getting any pressure on the Palestinian front from the Americans.
No, he's not getting it from the Americans, and he's not getting it domestically, and even the Europeans are not doing all that much to pressure him. So I don't think he's doing – I don't think he's focusing on Iran to divert attention from the Palestinian issue. He's really – nobody's pressuring him to do so.
Well, Dr. Gaziev, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Guy Zip. He's a professor at American University School of International Service and director of the Israel National Security Project, an online repository of statements by Israeli security experts who favor a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He's the author of Why Hawks Become Doves, Shimon Peres, and Foreign Policy Change in Israel. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back examining the staggering hypocrisy of the overtly Christian Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, who is quite happy to see students ripped off with crippling student debt.